Welcome to this week's edition of the Wallingford and District Talking Newspaper, bringing you news from the Wallingford Herald on Wednesday the 13th of May 2026. The readers this week are Jane, a new voice for you, Sophia, and Sue. I am your producer, Keith, and the copier and distributor is Pete.
Hello, this is Jane. The first article is Residents Doubts Over Proposed Park and Ride Sites. A possible new park and ride proposed for sites near Wallingford has been met with doubt from people in the town. Oxfordshire County Council undertook a study to identify requirements for new, improved and additional park and rides in the county. The study suggests the potential for new park and rides in the long term at Berensfield or the Golden Balls roundabout, both near Wallingford in South Oxfordshire. There'll be more about this article later in the session. Is the youngest to abseil down Abbey. A Wantage schoolboy has become the youngest person ever to abseil 100 feet down an Abbey tower. Jack James, 11, completed the descent at Dorchester Abbey on May the 2nd, raising more than £1,200 for the church and Oxfordshire charity Be Free Young Carers. The challenge was inspired by his grandmother, the rector of Dorchester Abbey, who took part in the abseil 2 years ago. He was denied the opportunity to take part at the time because he was too young. Jack said, "I feel really proud to have been able to raise so much money. The steps going up to the tower were quite big. The hardest part was stepping onto the ledge because it was really slippery, but I felt calm going down and I really enjoyed it." Jack's mother, Becky James, said the family are fine and there to support him, including his dad, Fred, and sister, Joy. She added, he also had his grandparents and uncle and aunt, cousin Emmy, 12 weeks old, as well as local Wantage friends who also came to watch. It was such a beautiful sunny day and a wonderful positive vibe. We are all so proud of Jack. He's such a funny, caring and confident young man and has been keen to raise as much as he can for these charities. And there's a photo of Jack in all of his abseil gear before he goes over the top, smiling for the camera.
Hello, I'm Sophia. School creates tribute to Sir David Attenborough. A giant mosaic has been created in tribute to Sir David Attenborough. The piece, created by pupils at Europa School UK in Culham, near Abingdon, celebrates the broadcaster's 100th birthday and reflects his lifelong commitment to the natural world and sustainability. Titled Papilio Europa Attenborough, the collaborative artwork is made up of hundreds of hand-drawn images of plants and animals. It was created by 500 pupils from across the school and will be displayed on site for students, staff and visitors to enjoy. A spokesperson for the school said, "Sustainability is very important to our school and our community, and this felt like a wonderful event to celebrate together." Key Stage 2 teacher Mrs. Harries said pupils were especially enthusiastic about contributing to something in honour of Sir David. She said, "The children were so excited at the idea of creating a special gift for Sir David. They all know him and they were eager to talk about the wildlife they had watched on his programmes. They got stuck in drawing their favourite plants or animals and created beautiful pictures. We have everything on there, from snakes to jellyfish, via the most popular, the axolotl." The school now plans to send a poster of the mosaic to Sir David, along with photographs of some of the individual drawings. Mrs. Harry said, "We plan to send him a poster of the artwork, along with photographs of some of the individual pieces. He has done so much to inspire love of nature, and we wanted to thank him for inspiring us." Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer was among those paying tribute to Sir David for his birthday. He said, "I would like to send my warmest wishes to Sir David Attenborough on his 100th birthday. Like millions of people across the country and all around the world, I grew up watching Sir David's programmes. For decades, the nation had been captivated by his passion for nature and his remarkable contribution to public broadcasting. He is a true national treasure and a pioneer in his field. May his work continue to inspire people of all ages to come." In the week leading up to the milestone, Sir David said he was completely overwhelmed by the birthday messages pouring in and thanked his well wishers most sincerely. In a recorded audio message shared the night before his birthday, he said, "I had rather thought that I would celebrate my 100th birthday quietly, but it seems that many of you have had other ideas. I've been completely overwhelmed by my birthday greetings, from preschool groups to care home residents and countless individuals and families of all ages. And there's a picture of three children holding up the mosaic and a picture of Sir David.
Record-breaking turnout for Vehicle Rally. A vehicle rally and parade in Wallingford has enjoyed a record-breaking turnout, with hundreds of visitors, organisers and volunteers contributing to the event. The annual Wallingford Vehicle Rally and Parade on Sunday once again proved a tremendous success, according to the organiser. Bringing together classic car enthusiasts, charities and local people, the day saw a record-breaking 330 vehicles assemble at Wallingford Sports Park before parading through the town. After rolling down streets lined by cheering crowds, the cars parked in the Kinecroft to celebrate motoring heritage and community spirit. Mark Brett, chair of the Wallingford Vehicle Rally and Parade, said, "This event, like so many had held in Wallingford, simply could not happen without the incredible support of volunteers, local organisations, sponsors and the wider community. This year's event has so far raised £28,000 for selected local causes, many of whom attended to raise awareness and support on the day." The Mayor of Wallingford, Ros Lester, joined the parade in one of the last events of her year in office. And there's a picture of three guys in black top hats and with white faces. And I think I saw them driving down the road in something that looked like a big cheese. Oh, by the way, my name's Sue, I forgot to say at the beginning.
£5.4 million revamp starts on Abbey Buildings. The £5.4 million scheme to renovate Abingdon's historic Abbey Buildings has begun. The Abbey Buildings Restoration Project won a £4 million grant from the National Lottery last summer. The National Lottery Heritage Fund grant is expected to cover a substantial part of the cost of the once-in-a-generation improvement project. The Town Council agreed to grant £200,000 over 4 years, which helped the Abbey Buildings Trust unlock the lottery fund grant funding. Vale of Whitehorse District Council also provided a loan of up to £100,000 to help ensure the restoration could go ahead. The buildings are all Grade 1 listed, date back to the 13th century and include the Unicorn Tavern, Chequer, Undercroft and Long Gallery. They were saved from demolition in 1944. Gregory Bensberg, chairman of the Abingdon Abbey Buildings Trust, said he was delighted that renovation work has now started. He added, "This is a major project and I'm delighted that the work is now underway. The last theatre booking is for the end of June and then it will shut for a year and reopen in September 2027. The buildings have not been very accessible to everyone and have not been well insulated. Lots of conservation work will take place as the buildings have deteriorated in the past 50 years. Lots of skilled renovation work needs to take place and will be carried out very carefully as the buildings are listed. We are working very closely with Historic England. The buildings are of huge historical importance to Abingdon, and as well as being Grade 1 listed, are a scheduled ancient monument. Once complete, the Abbey buildings will become a fully accessible space for community activities, events, opportunities for volunteering, skill building and learning." And
Co-op store to permanently close its doors. A village co-op store will permanently close, the company has confirmed, as it's financially unsustainable to continue trading. The Mid-Counties Cooperative in Dorchester, near Wallingford, has been a much valued food shop in the high street of the village, but the company has confirmed it will be closing the store and selling the building in the near future after it became financially unsustainable to continue trading. A spokesperson for Mid-Counties Cooperative said, "As a cooperative society owned by our members, we regularly review our estate to ensure our stores are profitable and provide an essential purpose within the communities they serve. As part of this process and after careful consideration, the society has made the difficult decision to close our Dorchester-on-Thames store. Unfortunately, despite the best efforts of all our colleagues, the store has been financially unsustainable for some time, and there is no viable opportunity to improve the financial position of the store. We have also explored other options in the local area to potentially relocate, but regrettably have been unable to secure any other suitable location on this occasion. Our first priority is to offer our support to all colleagues during what we recognise will be a difficult time. At this time, the store remains open for trading as usual, and we will keep colleagues and the wider community informed about potential timelines for the closure.
Morris dancers celebrate arrival of summer. Dancers marked the arrival of summer with a festive display of music and tradition in the early hours of May Day. Wallingford Morris took to the streets of Wallingford at 6:30 a.m. on May the 1st, performing a processional dance across Wallingford Bridge before visiting several key locations, including the Town Arms, the Town Hall, Market Square and the Dolphin. The group continued their celebrations later in the morning with performances at Wallingford Library, St John's Primary School and Rushcourt Care Home. Jack Worth, foreman for Wallingford Morris, said, "Dancing early in the morning on May the 1st to welcome summer is a long-standing tradition across England that thousands of Morris dancers participate in each year, including at a very big gathering in Oxford every May Day. This year, Wallingford Morris celebrated the coming of summer with a day of dancing in Wallingford. We were delighted that the people of Wallingford embraced the ancient celebration of May Day and look forward to making it an annual tradition for years to come." At St John's Primary School, 200 children joined in a mass dance. And there's a picture of three of the members of Wallingford Morris in all their finery in the sunlight.
Town park and ride idea met with doubt. A possible new park and ride site proposed for near Wallingford has been met with doubt from people in the town. Oxfordshire County Council undertook a study to identify requirements for new, improved and additional park and ride facilities. The study suggests the potential for new sites in the long term at Beaconsfield or the Golden Balls roundabout, both near Wallingford in South Oxfordshire. It also reveals that sites for new park and rides have been allocated in the area's local plans for the A4074 corridor at land south of Grenoble Road, which would provide 600 additional spaces, and greater capacity at Pear Tree Park and Ride with a new site at Oxford Airport, providing parking for 1,100 more cars. Additional sites have been allocated in the district local plans at Coomer Hill for 600 more spaces and the A34 Lodge Hill interchange. The study stated that improvements were particularly needed at Parkway, Thornhill, Redbridge and Pear Tree, and additional sites in the southeast of the country would fill a gap in the current network's provision of park and rides. A spokesperson for the County Council previously said that a new park and ride site at Beaconsfield or Golden Balls could provide additional or alternative park and ride capacity in the longer term. Town Councillor Ros Lester, former Mayor of Wallingford, who was succeeded at the end of the municipal year on Tuesday, said, "We have a very good bus service into Oxford City. Why would we want a large car park in the beautiful green area of the county? Let's talk about the potholes that they won't sort out or the pavements that are trip hazards in our town centres. That's where they should be spending their time and our money." In the Central Oxfordshire Travel Plan by Oxfordshire County Council, the authority found that park and rides had been successful in reducing congestion and supporting a shift into sustainable travel mode. Oxfordshire County Councillor James Barlow, Green, expressed his support for the potential new scheme. He said, "I welcome any sensible proposals to help residents travel into Oxford in ways that make it easier, cheaper and healthier, be that public or active transport. An expansion of the park and ride schemes could beneficially reduce congestion and road wear on the A4074, drive down exhaust pipe air pollution and climate heating emissions, and public transport can increase mental health too, through connection with other travellers. I look forward to seeing the full plans, as well as those to make it safer for those residents who want to actively travel, like by bike or e-bike, to do so. The councillor added that the real solution would be to reduce the need for private car ownerships to the absolute minimum, rather than park and ride schemes which still require driving. And there's a picture there of what looks like a half-empty car park somewhere, but it doesn't say where.
Firm retained as waste collector by two councils. A renewed partnership aims to build on years of success in recycling and waste reduction. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils have awarded a new waste collection and street cleansing contract to Biffa Waste Services, following what they described as a rigorous procurement process. The contract will come into effect from the 29th of June 2026. The existing contract, which was extended by 2 years in 2024, has contributed to both councils consistently ranking in the top 10 of the English recycling tables for more than a decade. Councillor Sue Cooper, Cabinet Member for the Environment at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "Our waste partnership has been successful over the last 16 years, and I'm proud of the fact that it has played a big role in setting us amongst the top recycling areas in the country, which is also thanks to the great effort made by our residents. I'd like to congratulate Biffa for coming out of the robust procurement process as the preferred contractor." Councillor Robert Clegg, Vale of the Whitehorse District Council's Cabinet Member for Environmental Services and Waste, said the contract is designed to be flexible in light of possible future changes to local government structures.
Bakers are on the move as they need bigger premises, and that's a joke because need is spelt K-N-E-A-D. Staff at a family-run bakery bid farewell to their original premises as they move into a new premises in Wallingford. The Blueberry Bread Company was launched in the village of the same name near Didcot to immediate success 6 years ago from the garage of its founder, Jacko Nolan, where every loaf and treat were baked. Since then, the bakers have expanded to stock the bread shed at Savage's Garden Centre in Blueberry, Route 1 Garden Centre near Didcot, near Wallingford, Mr and Mrs Park's Butchers in Cholsey and Brightwell Village stores. They have now expanded into their very own bakery and shop in St Peter's Place, Wallingford. On the move, the head baker said, "I can't lie, it was a bit of a moment, almost bang on 6 years to the day when we started, the first loaf being baked in our domestic ovens in 2020. It was sadly time to say goodbye to the garage bakery as we move forward onto our next step on St Peter's Street in Wallingford. While the baking is moving to our new premises, I want to reassure you that we'll still have our site at Savage's Blueberry going. We wouldn't have made it this far without the support of our Blueberry customers, and we very much like to continue to serve you from the village it all started in. This journey has also certainly been a team effort, with a lot of support from family and friends, helping with baking, shaping, market stalls, and all the team we've had over the last few years. We look forward to seeing you all in Wallingford and to continue to serve you in Blueberry too. The Wallingford premises will now become the independent business's only baking space and will offer loaves, pastries, savouries, sweet treats and more over the counter." Mr. O'Nolan added that the first ever brick and mortar site had come at the right time for the business. From its humble beginnings, delivering loaves during the pandemic, selling flour for charity, and hosting pop-ups at pubs and garden centres. And there's a picture of four of the staff looking very confident and very cheerful, two men and two women.
Trail marks 30 years with a walking relay. A 24-day walking relay has been held this summer to mark 30 years of the Thames Path National Trail. The relay will involve hundreds of walkers and community groups as they travel the full 185.2-mile route from the Gloucestershire to East London, passing through Henley and other times along the way. It begins at the River Source near Kemble, Gloucestershire on June the 5th, finishing at the Woolwich Foot Tunnel on June the 28th. Hannah Guttridge, Thames Path National Trail Manager, said, "We've created 24 walks along the Thames Path, Each walk will be led by an experienced leader from a community group, several of them from the Ramblers. We're now inviting everyone to join us on the relay. To mark the anniversary, 30 poems by poet-in-residence Robert Seater will be featured in 30 locations between the Source and Woolwich, accessible through QR codes on Waymarker posts. A special mural by artist Vicky Admirals is also being painted on Mill Meadows Pavilion in Henley-on-Thames during May. Miss Guthrie said, "We're delighted to be collaborating with enthusiastic and experienced walk leaders from local Ramblers groups, regular Thames Path users, and the Mayors for a Drinkable Thames. The relay has been organised in partnership with Drinkable Rivers Foundation, and it's accompanied by a small, beautiful picture of the River Thames at dusk."
Community college placed in lockdown. A school was put into lockdown after a fake threat by phone was made. The incident occurred at Icknield Community College in Watlington on Thursday of last week, in which all students and staff were locked down on site. Parents began receiving communications from the school at about 1 p.m. that the situation was ongoing and no one could access the college grounds to prevent interference with the police operations. A communication seen by this newspaper from Icknield Community College to parents at the school said, "The school remains in lockdown at this time. Police are currently on site and are supporting the school in managing the situation safely. All pupils and staff remain safe and continue to be supervised by school staff. We understand that this is a concerning situation and appreciate your continued patience and cooperation." Thames Valley Police said the school took the decision to go into lockdown after it received a malicious communication, though this was not on advice from the police. The Force added, there was not thought to be of any threat to the public. A further communication from the school sent just late in the afternoon said the lockdown was lifted and students were able to return to the normal school site.
Steam Rail fans watch wartime reenactors. Visitors to Didcot Railway Centre have been enjoying watching wartime reenactors. It was back to the 1940s at the Transport Heritage Centre when a team of actors dressed up in period costumes to offer the public a glimpse into the life during the Second World War. Hundreds of people enjoyed watching the actors get into character at the visitor centre next to Didcot Parkway over the bank holiday weekend. Frank Dumbleton, a volunteer at the centre, who is also a photographer, said, "It was great fun at the railway centre over the bank holiday weekend with the Steam Into the 40s event. Hundreds of visitors were entertained by dozens of reenactors to show what life would have been like on the railways during the Second World War. Thousands of steam railway fans visit the centre every year, enjoying the opportunity to ride on the steam trains and visit other attractions, including a cafe, engine shed, shop and museum." And there's a lovely picture of three ladies. I think they look as though they're wearing sort of WVS uniforms, obviously busy and doing some clearing up and catering, and they look just perfect as people from the 1940s.
Boy's two-year stint in the West End. A schoolboy has completed a two-year stint on the professional stage. 13-year-old Joseph Burrows from Chilton near Didcot played Nigel in the West End production of Matilda the Musical at London's Cambridge Theatre. The show, based on Roald Dahl's beloved children's book, has been running in the West End since 2011. Joseph, now in year 8 at Urrea School in Didcot, landed the role after auditioning at age 11. His mother, Louise Burrows, said, "Joseph had just finished his SAT, so it was a good time in year 6 when everything important had finished and there was quite a lot of downtime. He was still in year 6 when he was doing all the rehearsing, and he had just started in year 7 at Aureus when he began the show. In fact, I think he missed the first couple of days at school because he was performing." She praised his school for its understanding and support during his time at the West End. She said, "The school had been brilliant. I made sure they were kept in the loop with Joseph's schedule each week, and the teachers would put things in the online classroom. There was also the same support from the team at Matilda. Joseph's well-being was always the priority. We'd be doing our homework on the train and looking at lessons. The way Joseph managed it all was amazing. It was quite something for an 11 or 12-year-old boy to carry on with everything and to manage and balance it all. His next stage appearance will be closer to home. He has been cast as Marlin in Nemo Jr., set to be performed at the Cornerstone in Didcot next month. His twin brother, Benjamin, and younger sister, Layla, will also appear in the show. And the article is accompanied by pictures of Joseph Burrows playing Nigel in the West End production. There's one of him in a jacket, jumper and shorts, like a little schoolboy. And another one where he's obviously jumping around and singing.
Councillors given science insight. Politicians were given an insight into the worlds of advanced science and technology on visit to Culham campus. The visit by Vale of White Horse and South Oxfordshire District Councillors was organised to learn more about the ongoing research and projects at the Science and Technology site. Culham campus has been a centre for fusion research since 1965 and is known today as the largest fusion technology cluster. It was the Royal Naval Air Station HMS Hornbill before being selected in the 1950s by the UK Atomic Energy Authority for its fusion research laboratory. And it's accompanied with a picture of the councillors at the campus behind what seems to be the laboratory.
World Cup on the way for poo sticks. Experts in the art of competitive river twig racing will gather beside the Thames this month for the World Poo Sticks Championships. The event, organised by the Rotary Club of Abingdon, will return on May the 24th at Sandford Lock near Oxford and is expected to draw competitors and spectators from far and wide. This year's championships are especially meaningful as they celebrate the centenary of Winnie the Pooh, the much-loved bear who made the game of poo sticks famous in A.A. Milne's The House at Pooh Corner. Richard Kirby, event organiser from the Rotary Club of Abingdon, said, "The World Poo Sticks Championships has been such a joy to organise over the years, and it's wonderful to see generations of families coming together for a day of fun. Celebrating 100 years of Winnie the Pooh this year makes it even more special, and I'm personally so grateful to partners like Alica Bank for helping us continue this tradition while raising funds for causes close to our hearts. It's a day that truly celebrates the spirit of our community. Set on the River Thames, the event brings to life the simple pleasure of dropping sticks into the water and watching them float beneath a bridge, just as Pooh Bear and his friends did in the classic stories. What started as a small activity has grown into a global event, with competitors travelling from across the UK and abroad. Participants range in age from 4 to 84, making it an event that spans generations. Importantly, the championships also support charitable causes, with all funds raised going towards Rotary-supported projects, including donations to the Alzheimer's Society and other community charities. And it's accompanied by a picture of several of Winnie the Pooh characters, which I assume is a library picture because the event has yet to take place.
New Transport Chief appointed to replace Gant. A new Oxfordshire Transport Chief has been appointed after the resignation of the controversial boss who brought in the congestion charge. Councillor Rebecca Fletcher has been made the Cabinet Minister for Transport Management at Oxfordshire County Council after Councillor Andrew Gant announced he was standing down at midday on Monday, May the 11th. Miss Fletcher is the Liberal Democrat member for Harwell, Western Valley and Blueberry. She was elected in 2025 and has lived in Oxfordshire since 2021. Miss Fletcher works for a medical school in London, so her particular interests lie in improving community health, wellbeing and social care provision. The appointment has been listed on a councillor details page on the Oxfordshire County Council website. Her Oxfordshire's responsibilities include public transport, highways management, street lighting and parking. Potholes, the continuation of the congestion charge, set to become traffic fillers after the reopening of the Botley Road this summer, zero emission zones, potential new park and rides, and the expansion of the 20 mile an hour speed limits are all in her remit. This follows Mr. Gant standing down from the post after 4 years.
And now we're on the On This Day page. On this day last year, Kim Kardashian told a Paris trial of men accused of robbing her at gunpoint she feared she would be raped and said, "I absolutely did think I was going to die." On this day, a number of people, famous people, celebrated their birthday, were born. Harvey Keitel, actor, 87. Zoe Wanamaker, actress, 77. Stevie Wonder, singer, 76. Rosie Boycott, who was the former editor of The Independent and The Daily Express, 75. Selena Scott, former presenter, 75. Richard Madeley, TV presenter, 70. Frances Barber, actress, 68. And Samantha Morton, actress, 49. And on this day, in 1981, Pope John Paul II survived an assassination attempt in St. Peter's Square in Rome. In history, on this day, in 1607, Captain John Smith landed on the Virginia coast and started the first permanent English settlement in the New World, Jamestown. In 1830, the Republic of Ecuador was created. In 1835, the death of the architect John Nash, who planned Regent's Park and Trafalgar Square. 1842, Sir Arthur Seymour Sullivan, composer, was born in Lambeth, son of a bandmaster at Sandhurst Military College. In 1846, on this day, the United States declared war on Mexico. In 1914, Joe Louis, heavyweight boxing champion known as the Brown Bomber, was born in Lexington, Alabama. In 1943, German and Italian forces in Africa surrendered. In 1961, death of Gary Cooper, American actor who was twice an Oscar winner.
This is from a column called Money Magpie, and it's how to protect yourself online. Jasmine Bertes says the rush towards digital banking has left many older people feeling vulnerable, but understanding a few key roles could help keep your money safe. I have spent years warning about the dangers of Britain becoming too dependent on technology. I don't like the speed at which bank branches are disappearing. I worry about older people being pushed online against their will. Cash still matters, not just financially, but socially too. There is something reassuring about being able to walk into a bank, speak to a human being, and physically see your money moving where it needs to go. So if you are somebody who feels nervous about online banking or shopping, I completely understand it. Frankly, I think some caution is healthy, because the reality is that fraudsters are becoming more sophisticated every year. Fake texts can look exactly like genuine bank messages. Scam websites can appear incredibly professional. Even confident internet users get caught out now. However, avoiding the digital world altogether is becoming harder and harder in modern Britain. My first rule is never rush financial decisions online. This alone would stop a huge number of scams. Fraudsters thrive on urgency. They want you to be frightened, embarrassed, or panicked so that you react quickly. That is why scam messages nearly always contain phrases like, "Urgent action required. Your account will be suspended. Suspicious payment detected. Click immediately. Your parcel cannot be delivered." The moment something creates panic, stop. Do not click the link. Do not ring the number in the text. Do not hand over information. Instead, close the message. Wait 5 minutes. Contact the company directly using a trusted phone number or website. That short pause is often enough to break the scammer's control. Golden rules for staying safe online. Never bank on public Wi-Fi. Free Wi-Fi in cafes, stations, and airports can be far less secure. To bank online, use your home internet or mobile data instead. Write passwords down safely if necessary. People are constantly told never to write passwords down, but for some older people, that advice is unrealistic. A carefully hidden notebook at home is often safer than reusing the same weak password everywhere. And finally, we cannot simply abandon older people to digitalization. What frustrates me most is how quickly society expects older generations to adapt. Britain has gone too far towards digital-only services in some areas, but understanding a few basic rules, safety rules, could genuinely save people thousands of pounds. And perhaps the most important thing to remember is this: being cautious online does not make you foolish.
This is an article taken from the BBC News website. Trenches and big holes, working at the nuclear dawn. It was the dawn of the nuclear age. In 1946, the government set up a research site on the use of atomic energy outside the village of Harwell. Fast forward 80 years, and the Harwell Science and Innovation Campus in Oxfordshire now has the UK's largest concentration of national research facilities, including the Diamond Light Source. One man who has watched it grow from a post-war outpost to a multi-million pound research centre is Griff Bowen, now 99, who first started working there in 1948. A former RAF base, Harwell was in Berkshire at the time and was chosen because its existing buildings and infrastructure made it easier to develop at speed. At the time, Bowen, who had served as a stoker in the Royal Navy, lived in the nearby village of Chiltern and was looking for work. He recalled how he got the job after a five-minute chat with the plant's labour officer. Bowen said, "When I came here, it was all trenches and big holes in the ground. There was only about 200 of us here." Bowen was required to sign the Official Secrets Act and keep his work confidential. "Safety was as important back then as it is today," said Bowen, who was required to wear a dosimeter device or film badge to monitor for radiation levels. With the country only 3 years removed from the end of the war, Bowen says the site quickly developed into a close-knit community. The camaraderie was great because most of us were ex-service people. Everybody was very friendly at that particular time. We all sort of mixed in and did the best for everybody, he added. Bowen was responsible for the safe disposal of solid and liquid radioactive waste and escorting it to different sites, which could take a considerable amount of time. Waste from the site was treated at the liquid effluent treatment plant before safe disposal, with some escorted to the Windscale nuclear plant in Cumbria, now known as Sellafield, for storage. Bowen worked his way through different roles, but was always part of the same team, responsible for waste disposal. He was given several promotions and was managing a team of 25 people before retiring in 1990. His daughter, Teresa, followed him and is now in her 50th year of working on and around the campus.
And here are some upcoming events that you might want to go to. On Saturday the 16th of May, the Cholsey Repair Cafe is open from 10 a.m. to 12:45, and it will be at the Cholsey Pavilion. So you can take along your items for repair. That includes any domestic items and bicycles. And there's also a tea and cake on sale at the community cafe, which you can go to while you wait. On Sunday the 17th of May, Brightwell Open Gardens will happen from 2 p.m. to 5:30 at Brightwell Village. A number of lovely gardens will be open throughout the village, and there'll be tea and cakes and a PIM stall to refresh you. On Monday the 18th of May, My Vision Social Group is holding a meetup from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Wallingford Library. It's a great opportunity to meet other visually impaired people and to have some great conversations and also enjoy some hot drinks and snacks. For any questions or concerns, please contact info@myvision.org.uk, or you can call the number 01865 725 595. On Friday the 22nd of May, it marks the Agatha Christie weekend, three days where they mark the death of Agatha Christie 50 years ago. And this event will occur at Wallingford Museum, and it will be organised by the museum and offer guided walks and other events will be announced. Any information you can find about this weekend on the Wallingford Museum website, wallingfordmuseum.org.uk. On Sunday, the 7th of June, there's a town band concert from 2 to 3pm in the Castle Gardens in Wallingford. Wallingford Town Council band concerts will have a ukulele band called Wally Ukes, and the entrance is free. You can enter via Bear Lane off Castle Street. And finally, on the Sunday, the 14th of June, there's the Walled Gardens of Wallingford from 1pm to 5:30pm in Wallingford Town Centre. The Walled Gardens of Wallingford event returns for 2026 with 17 private walled gardens opening their gates to the public. It offers visitors the chance to explore hidden spaces rarely seen. The event provides a unique glimpse into some of Wallingford's most charming private gardens, a relaxed and enjoyable way to spend a summer afternoon while supporting local charities and discovering a hidden side of Wallingford.
And finally, Museum urges people to install swift boxes as numbers fall. Swifts have returned to Oxford's Museum of Natural History to nest every year for 80 years, but numbers have fallen sharply over the past decade. The birds spend up to 10 months of the year in continuous flight, only landing to breed. However, with fewer nesting sites available in the UK, the species is facing a 47% decline nationally, according to the museum. People are being encouraged to buy purpose-built swift houses and install them in their own homes. Education officer Chris Jarvis said, "They have to nest with people. The old growth forests where they used to nest are gone. They now go into roof gaps, attics, but all these sites are also going as people have conversions and they disappear. Swifts are the only birds that can fly continuously for 10 months straight. This means they sleep, eat and mate while in flight, making their chosen nesting locations very important."
That concludes this week's edition of the Talking Newspaper. We'll be back with you next week with another team of readers. Until then, from us, it's goodbye.